Christmas has happened.
It's over.
Are you glad that it's over?
No, I love Christmas. It's still the spirit of Christmas right now. Yeah. It's all around us.
Yeah, it's still holiday season. So now we're preparing for New Year's Eve.
Yeah, and 2021 is about to be all that. I already know. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say this. I say this to my friends, but I don't say this too much publicly. But I guess this is as public as it gets at the moment. 2020, in spite of it all, wasn't horrible for me.
I didn't want to say that. I mean, look.
Like, 2020 was good. It was good to me in things that I was looking to achieve, to time that I was looking to spend with my friends, to things that I was able to do that I've never been able to do before. And I think amidst it all, if we can end this year thinking about the things that went right, we know all the things that went wrong. There's so many obvious things that went wrong. But if we could just take stock of the things that went right, I don't know if this year was horrible for everybody.
Yeah, no, it was bad, but it was good too, right? You know, there was a lot of loss.
Over
300,000 people died this year because of COVID. And even
for those who weren't lost, there were a lot of people who were sick, who got COVID and had really horrible experiences and are still dealing with some of the symptoms.
Millions of people lost their jobs, but I know that it impacted a lot of families. Like, I saw a lot of aunts and uncles and dads and grandmas who got taken out, and that's a shame. Now, in addition to that, the Lord is still in the blessing business. That's all I'm saying. And we've been blessed despite COVID.
Yeah. Again, I just hope that everybody is in a place as we go towards the last days of this year to be mindful of all the wrong that went bad. Just take stock of some of the good. There was some good there.
Absolutely.
So just for a second, let's take a second. Alan hates small talk on air.
No, I'm a small talk.
We're gonna do a little bit really quickly. This is how you guys get to know us. We want you to really know who we are. Just highlight three things. Doesn't have to be your top three. Just three things that went well for you in 2020.
Business has been great. I think on the heels of Black Lives Matter, I think we've been more in focus as a Black wealth management firm. That's been great. That's one. Number two, I'm really thankful for my family. My mom was sick and she's doing a lot better now. And then third, on the business front, we made a major power move this year, you know, in terms of some of the things we're doing with our franchise businesses. And I won't say exactly what that power move is, but just know I'm smiling from ear to ear.
Yeah, that's good. I think those three are good. I think mine is the first one is that I was really able to focus on my health and wellness this year, which I have not been able to do as consistently as I've wanted for a very long time, primarily because pre-COVID, we are insanely busy, always on the go, everywhere, all the time. You're traveling, I'm traveling, it's a mess. And so being forced to stay at home, you know, I work out at home, but I've really been very consistent, literally since day one of COVID, of being able to focus on my health and wellness. And that's been very meaningful to me. Two, this is going to sound backwards, but I've been able to spend more time with my friends this year than I have in a very, very long time for the same exact reasons. Pre-COVID, I'm busy all the time. I'm never available unless you're having a baby or some sort of major tentpole moment. I ain't going to be there. And even though we didn't get together a ton, I think I got together with my friends maybe 5 times this year. That's more than double what I've been able to do in past years.
That's great.
And so that has just been very meaningful to me. And then three, business. Business has been rocking and rolling. You know, it's been a great, great year for us business-wise. As you mentioned, we made a power move. We cannot mention it on air. So Alan's not just being a jerk. Like, we legally can't mention it on air, but big things happening. And my bonus, I moved into my first home this year. I know it's. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was still this year.
That was this year.
I mean, yeah. Thank God I moved in right before COVID because I was staying with my parents, you know, in my transition period.
You've got a home anniversary coming up.
Yeah. So I got to move into my first home this year. And so it's been a huge, huge year for me. It's been a celebratory year on a lot of fronts. And again, we faced a lot of adversity with COVID and everything that's happening in the world. But 2020 was good to me.
All I want to say is that, yes, there's been a lot of negative things in people's lives, but I believe God also wants us to focus on the good and what he's done for us. Otherwise, we're ungrateful. Like, we made it through,
right.
And we should be grateful. We should be excited about what's to come.
Yeah. And what's to come is 2021. So you feel optimistic about 2021.
Oh, man. The future has never been brighter.
Okay.
Literally.
Well, today we still got to talk about some things that happened in 2020.
Okay.
Okay. Today we're talking about IPOs.
Initial public offerings.
Lately, over the last couple of weeks, there's been some major IPOs, Airbnb, DoorDash. It's been a lot going on. And people, when they hear IPO, when they hear somebody's going public, they just automatically get excited. They don't know why.
Yeah.
They ain't buy no stock. They're not invested. They're just excited. Like, oh, this is big. This is great. Like, they don't know what it means. They don't know what's happening. They're just excited. I think they're excited that stock could be available if they ever decided to get invested.
But that's where we come in. It's to really have the conversation, explain to you what these things mean, explain how do you get involved, and really just break it down. How does it work? What is an IPO? There's so many people that are ashamed to say they don't know stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of people will hit me up on Instagram, like friends that I have or people that I knew at some point in life. We're not going to call them friends. Like, we might have went to middle school together. And they'll be like, what do you think about such and such IPO? And I will give them my feedback, but I know you're not invested. I know you're not buying any stock. Like, people just get excited around this. I think they want to then take this information and then sound cool somewhere else. Like, they want to go to work or talk to their friends. Like, I don't got time for that. I got to focus on this IPO. Like, do you? There's nothing for you to really do. Like, it's what's happening? Do you even know why people go public? And we're going to talk about all those things today. But, you know, there's been some big IPOs all year, to be honest. There have been some big ones, and I'm excited about them for a variety of reasons. And Lord only knows what's going to go public next year.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we got to talk about it. I think we have to make it clear on what an IPO is, what it means when a company goes public, what's the point, and why do people get excited?
So what is an IPO? An IPO is the very first sale of stock by a company to the public.
Right. So a company can be in business for years, decades, you know, and an IPO is when they decide to make stock available to the public, right? So it doesn't mean it's a new company. It doesn't mean anything necessarily about the company itself. It just means that they are now going to allow the public to be shareholders of this company.
When you say shareholder, you mean owner. Like, it's a first chance for regular people to have an ownership stake in a company.
Right. So, for example, this is just my petty beef, right? Chick-fil-A has been doing great for a very long time. Very long time. We all know that Chick-fil-A is top tier fast food, right?
Is it safe to say you're a fan, Tiffany?
I mean, I've been a fan of Chick-fil-A. Y'all, one day y'all will hear the story how I made my college decision based on the fact that they put a Chick-fil-A on campus. Shout out to Morgan State University. But Chick-fil-A is up there. And I know a lot of people have issues with their views and their standings on a number of different things, but you're going to go get the chicken. Like, you're going to get the chicken sandwich. However you feel about it, you know what I mean? I think people are oftentimes won over by the fact that they're closed on Sunday. So it's like, at least they love Jesus. Okay.
I'm angry about that every Sunday.
But either way, Chick-fil-A has been doing well for a very long time. They're opening locations left and right. They're doing great things. Lemonade's still popping. All things are wonderful. Chick-fil-A is not even thinking about letting nobody own no pieces of the Chick-fil-A. You're not getting no pieces of the chicken.
You might be able to get a franchise.
Right.
You can't get the whole company.
But even the franchise, they're not even really letting you own the franchise. We'll talk about that on another episode. But again, as successful as Chick-fil-A is, they're not willing to share no ownership with nobody ever. The Cathy family is keeping all that money right where it is.
They'll take your dollars as a customer.
For sure. You can get a milkshake. Their milkshake machine is always working at
Chick-fil-A. But equity? Hold on. Yeah. All right. Don't get carried away.
Mind your business. Just mind your business.
And so what we're saying is there are a lot of private companies that have decided to be private because they don't want your money.
Yeah, we don't want you involved. We don't want to have to tell you nothing about nothing.
And then there's a handful of companies that have decided that, you know what, we want to go public. Yeah. We do want your money.
We'll take your money.
We need that money.
You can have a little bit of ownership of our company.
And that's what we're talking about. So an IPO is a chance for a company to go public, meaning to allow regular investors in the public to own an ownership stake in their company.
Yeah. Prior to going public, a company is considered private, right? So it's a private company. And that doesn't mean that they don't have any shareholders, but it's usually like the founders of the company, mm-hmm. some family members.
Maybe some employees.
Yeah, maybe some employees. But it's not like people we don't know.
Yeah.
You got to be down with the family in order to be, you know, a shareholder in a private company.
So why do companies go public? Number one, it's to bring in capital into the business. So again, Airbnb and DoorDash this month went public. They needed some capital.
Yeah, they wanted more money.
Yeah, they need to expand their business. They could go to private investors like venture capitalists, but those people have limited amounts of resources, right? I mean, they've got a lot of bread in totality, but they don't have the billions and billions of dollars they can get from going public in the stock market.
Yeah. So oftentimes with these companies, again, like Airbnb and DoorDash, you know, they're doing okay, right? In their minds, they're doing okay, but they could be doing a lot better with a lot more money. And so that is a major reason to go public because you can bring in a ton of money in a very quick period of time by giving up some ownership.
The next reason is to increase awareness of the company. Like, remember when Lyft had their IPO? And like Lyft had always been kind of like the number two in the car, the rideshare business. But when they had their IPO, they did it before Uber. And it was a real big deal. It helped their sales. It helped attract new drivers to Lyft. It's a way of raising awareness about the company.
I don't think Lyft is doing that well anymore right now in the awareness perspective. But that's just me.
They had a nice little pop.
They had a nice little run.
Yeah, they did.
It's like putting out a mixtape. When you go public, it's like dropping a mixtape. It allows you to be hot, you know, for a little while. Depends if it's a classic. If it's a classic, then it'll rise forever. But
I think this is our IPO mixtape.
Okay.
That's what this is.
That's
today.
What this podcast is.
Yep, the IPO mixtape. Okay. So the next reason why companies go public is to be able to recruit and retain employees through offering them employee stock options.
So this one we got to take a little bit of time to talk about because we've seen some firsthand wealth creation experiences.
We sure enough
right?
have.
So a lot of times people will work for startups, right? Or these private companies. But just let's talk about some startups, right? They'll work for these startups. And because these startups don't have a ton of capital, yes, they will offer them a fair salary, but they will also give them a good amount of stock options. They will give them stock in the company, mm-hmm. right? Before it's public, while it's private. And you're taking a chance here. You don't know if this company is going to work out. You don't know if they're necessarily going to go public. Like you are just saying, I have faith in the company and the work that we are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they go public,
baby,
listen,
come on.
We have had just this year, probably like four clients that started off 2020 doing all right and ended 2021
balling
millionaires.
Yeah. That's
just
a fact.
Off of they had stock options in companies that either went public or blew up in COVID. So we have one client who works for Zoom. We all know Zoom stock, or maybe you don't know, Zoom stock went crazy in COVID for obvious reasons because we are now all in a Zoom society. Started off doing well, ended up being the man, like literally became a millionaire. Didn't do anything different. Didn't get a new job, didn't get a raise, didn't start working new hours. None of these things. Just by believing in the company and taking those stock options, when they blew up, he blew up too.
Yeah. And this is a major key right here. When it comes to your career path, a lot of times we look for the stable company or we look for the entity that I know ain't going nowhere. Sometimes you need to think about the company that is going somewhere, a company that might be small today, but has the potential to blow up the way some of these other companies have blown up, because it can be a major wealth creation opportunity for you.
Yeah, there's like these two infamous stories out there about Facebook. There was one story where there was a DJ who was hired to DJ a Facebook holiday party. And they didn't have a lot of money at the time. And so they offered him stock options. Mm. And then when Facebook went public, he literally became like an ultra millionaire. supposedly, and I don't know nothing about this, supposedly Beyonce did the same thing. Supposedly once Facebook got further along, they hired Beyonce to perform at some sort of Facebook event. And instead of pay, or probably in addition to pay, she took or requested stock options.
Smart.
Smart. And again, when they blew up, she blew up.
And now look at Beyonce now.
I mean, that has nothing to do with Facebook. It's nothing.
Look at how everybody Beyonce, knows who Beyonce is now.
Does she even have a Facebook page? I don't even think she has a Facebook page. She All I'm saying page. Is I think you bring up a really great point here. When companies go public, the people who need to be the most excited are the employees who have taken stock options. Those are the winners, hands down. And it's an overnight thing. It's not like, you know, wow, in a couple of years. It's overnight in that the moment it happens, it happens. Like you can go to sleep with $50 and wake up with $5 million. Like that's literally very, very possible.
Also, you spoke to some of the vendors who've gotten shares, right? Like Airbnb, I don't know if you know this, but they reached out to all of their hosts and said, hey, we're doing our IPO. If you want to get in early on these shares, since you've been our partner, we'll give you a chance to buy some shares. So,
yeah, I remember when Square went public, and Square is a merchant service company that I've been using for a long time and other companies. They reached out to us early and said, listen, we're going to go public soon. Do you want some shares in advance, you know, for rocking with us prior to us being a big deal? And a lot of people bought shares, and that really worked out for them.
Absolutely. The final reason why companies go public is to create a currency for acquiring other companies. Like when you think about mergers and acquisitions, when you hear of one company buying another, often they're not paying cash. They're paying in their own shares. And so that gives them the currency to go out and make other acquisitions.
So let's talk about some of the biggest IPOs that have happened to date, because I know there are a lot that we are aware of just because we're familiar with the company, but they weren't the biggest.
Yeah, some of the biggest in history in the United States, number one is Alibaba. Alibaba raised $21 billion in their IPO, and that was in 2014. Do you even know Alibaba?
So I do, right? I was getting ready to say, like
people who is were probably Alibaba?
Like, who is Alibaba?
First I saw of all, that movie. It was trash.
Google Alibaba, Alibaba, if you're not familiar, right? Just Google Alibaba if you're not familiar, because it's super Amazon. Amazon on steroids a little bit. I mean, if Amazon could be on steroids.
And crack,
right, exactly.
It's the Chinese Amazon.
It's the Chinese Amazon, and we know the Chinese tend to always do it a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
But Alibaba, you can buy anything, right? So on Amazon, you can buy consumer goods. Alibaba, you could buy literally anything under the sun, short of drugs and humans, but anything else, bricks, not of coke, like bricks, like to build a house.
Yeah, they sell bootleg stuff too.
Proudly. Yes, if you're looking for that fake Chanel bag, Alibaba. Now, it's going to take a really long time to get here because it's in China, but literally any glue, just soles of shoes, anything that you want can be found on Alibaba. There are no boundaries whatsoever. And so, yeah, that was a really, really big deal. The company is still in play. I'm always shocked by how big Alibaba has become and that no one is trying to slow them down. Like with Amazon, it's like, you know, maybe Amazon's doing too much. They're infringing on small businesses. Alibaba is just out here. Don't nobody care. They're just letting them ruin lives and do what they got to do.
Alibaba's selling bootleg mixtapes of our podcast right now.
Listen, anything you want, wholesale, one of one, like you said, bootleg. It's plenty of bootleg on Alibaba, like whatever you want. But yeah, that's the biggest IPO in history.
Other big ones, Visa, $17 billion. Facebook, $16 billion. General Motors, $16 billion. AT&T, these are companies that, again, they're not all tech startups. Often, they're everyday companies that need to grow by bringing in some outside capital. I'll tell you one that's not on the list, but one that changed my life, UPS.
Okay.
My dad worked at UPS for 32 years. In 1996, UPS went public, and my dad, who worked literally at times delivering packages, had a chance to have some shares in the company. And he was able to retire early, all because of an IPO. So this stuff really hits home. It's not just the tech startups. It can be blue collar and white collar jobs.
Now, I will tell you this, because another very large IPO was Slack. Just because a company goes public doesn't necessarily mean that you're instantly making money.
Yeah.
As a person who just buys stock, as an employee, yes, but as a person who just buys stock, because I was in on the Slack IPO, and it's been a rough road for me, you know, as an investor on Slack. I'm just now starting to see some love. But, you know, you got to understand what you're doing when you're getting involved with IPOs or when they're happening. So stick with us. I'm Tiffany Hawkins.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we're the Momentum Advisors.
Hey, it's Nikki.
And Maria Elena, hosts of the North Star's newest podcast, America the Voiceless, a podcast that's about the right to vote and the fight to vote.
We believe that all Americans have a voice, but far too many Americans hit roadblocks when it comes to casting their votes.
In America the Voiceless, we hear from lawmakers, historians, activists, and everyday people as we unpack the barriers some Americans have to overcome to make sure their voices are heard during the voting process.
You can listen to a new episode of America the Voiceless every Thursday this fall.
All episodes are available on thenorthstar.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts. America the Voiceless.
So we are back.
Yes.
We are talking about IPOs.
The IPO mixtape.
The IPO mixtape. It's not a tour.
We're not going on tour.
We're not going on tour.
We kind of are.
People
right
can't
now.
Go on tour right now. So it's COVID.
Virtual tour.
Virtual tour. So speaking of virtual tour, I signed up for Clubhouse this week. And it made me think about Momentum Advisors. It made me think about our podcast and how we can have live conversations with people. But on a personal level, I was completely overwhelmed and terrified.
I can imagine so.
This is when I felt old. I was so scared. You sign up for Clubhouse, like somebody has to let you in, you know, it's VIP, whatever. Somebody let me in. And immediately, the moment that it opens, people are talking to you.
Are they talking to you or are they just talking?
They're talking to you.
Like, hey, Tiffany.
Hey, Tiffany.
Really?
Right. So first of all, I didn't know it was an
like,
audio.
Like, bro, you don't know me.
Right. So first of all, I didn't know it was an audio, like, social media. Like, I'm used to typing and texting. It's all audio. It's all people talking. I didn't invite them to talk to me. I didn't. Now, it was people that I knew, right? But there's no, hey, do you want to talk to this person? There's none of that. They just start talking. So then I'm like, can you hear me? Because I haven't approved anybody to hear me.
Why are you talking like E.T.?
Because I'm terrified. And they're like, yeah, we can hear you. I didn't have to say, hey, turn my sound on or anything like that. It was overwhelming.
So is this the platform for you or no?
I don't know. I was like, can you see me? Like, I didn't know how far we were going.
Are you in my house right now?
In this Clubhouse process. But, you know, maybe one day Momentum, Alan and I, we will have a Clubhouse room. I don't know what they're, club room, a room, something on Clubhouse where we can have a live conversation with you guys. We'll think about it.
Yeah, don't be in there yelling at me. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you do have to, it depends, at some point in the group, because they threw me a welcome party that I didn't ask for. They threw me a welcome party, and at some point, certain people have to get permission to speak, but not everybody. People will just start talking to you.
Did that make you feel welcome at least?
No, it made me feel infringed upon.
Oh, man.
Like, it was a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know how we got there. You said something that made me think about.
I don't know.
IPO
mixtape.
IPO mixtape. Oh, the tour. Yes. So we cannot do a physical tour. And we used to do events back in the
big
day.
Big events.
Where we would do live tapings.
We did Atlanta, LA, New York, another Atlanta. And we were working on Chicago and Houston.
And then COVID happened.
Yes.
After COVID, we got to do Houston. We have a lot of followers and clients and people in Texas. But I was saying that maybe we will do a tour on Clubhouse somehow.
Mm.
a Clubhouse seems tour.
I'm afraid now. I don't want.
Yeah, it's a lot. I texted my friends immediately, and I was like, "Listen, because I knew they weren't on Clubhouse. I said, don't rush on to this Clubhouse thing. Just chill out." But we are talking about IPOs.
Yes.
I hope Clubhouse doesn't have an IPO. Okay, let me dial it back.
You're in it now.
But supposedly, Clubhouse was started by VC and investors, and they wanted to be able to have conversations with each other about investment advice and about venture capital opportunities. And they are the ones that created Clubhouse and then eventually made it available to the public.
Mm. Okay. All right. Well, you've enlightened us. Thank you.
Okay. Shout out to Clubhouse. Please, if you are not on it, please don't rush to get on it. It's a lot.
And Clubhouse, if you're listening, cut us a check.
Listen. Just go public. Give us some shares and then go public.
Yeah, we'll take that.
We'll take that.
We'll take that. So what's the IPO process? So the process of a company going public, first they have to hire an investment bank. Like people always talk about those evil investment bankers where one of their primary roles is to take companies public through an IPO through a process that's called the underwriting process. The first step is that they file formal documents with the SEC and they issue a prospectus. They call this prospectus a red herring. You always love these Wall Street.
I hate Wall Street has the worst terms. They have the worst slang and jargon. It's very childish.
They call it a red herring because it's a prospectus that's preliminary and it has a little red warning label on the front page that just says this is not the final document.
It can't be like red flag or draft. You know, the term draft has been used for centuries. It's got to be a fish.
Red herring, yo.
Got it.
That's what it is. Just like bulls and bears, mm-hmm. and all the different things.
Not up
that...
and down, just bulls and
bears.
It's a
bull market right now.
Yeah. Just so you guys, let's real quick. When you hear people say it's a bull market, it's a bear market. A bull market means it's going up. A bear market means it's going down. I'm not about to explain to you.
No,
why,
I'll explain.
Because it's childish.
It's because when a bull fights, it bucks up.
Because we've all seen bulls fight before. We have so much experience with bulls fighting.
You've never seen a bull riding event?
Because that's customary. That's universal, right? So therefore, we should use the term universally.
And when a bear fights, it slashes down.
Right.
Downwards.
Exactly. Yeah. All our bear experience. The bears that we know don't fight. Yogi Bear, Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have... But yeah, so that's why they use the term bull and bear market. And now we know they use red herring.
And it's not a fish. It's literally just a prospectus. That's a preliminary prospectus because they have not yet disclosed the number of shares being issued nor the price.
And Wall Street doesn't like the term draft.
Yeah.
First draft. Don't like that. Second
it's
draft.
It's a little dry. We got to
bull
keep it
up,
interesting.
Down. It's y'all just trying to make, I think Wall Street tries to make themselves seem way smarter than they are. And they're actually quite childish. At this point, we're in a children's book. There's a lot of animals being used unnecessarily.
If there's an environment where interest rates are expected to go down, they call that dovish.
Exactly. Dovish. Just couldn't be failing.
How doves fly?
Do they fly down? Do you know this for a fact? Because I've never seen this personally. Do you know this for a fact?
I've only seen doves at a wedding.
Exactly.
Like,
and they fly up.
Like in
exactly.
New Jack City,
exactly.
Where they released the dove.
They fly
But eventually,
up.
I'm sure they came back downwards.
But you don't know. And Wall Street doesn't know either.
Yeah.
Listen, don't ever let these Wall Street people make you feel like they're more sophisticated than you because they're not. They're not at all. It's ridiculous.
So step one, the company hires an investment banker. Step two, they issue a red herring, mm-hmm. a preliminary prospectus. Step three, they have a roadshow, which are marketing events that are designed to just drum up attention from the investment community. These roadshows are not like concerts that people go to. They're meetings that they have with different groups of investors. Usually it's institutional investors who get invited to the roadshow. Most people have never been invited to a roadshow, and most people never will. But they'll hear about the company because once they file for that prospectus or that red herring, it gets written about in the newspaper, and that's when folks really start to pay attention.
Now, one thing I do want to talk about really quickly is these investment banks that do take companies public. Like, it's not any and everybody, right? Like, you just can't go to any bank, and any bank won't necessarily just take you, right? Like, there is a process to getting selected or who the investment bank is that you are going to work with. And I know this year, I believe it was this year, Goldman Sachs made some stipulations around the companies that they are willing to work with in taking them public.
Yeah, and Goldman basically said, look, unless you have a diverse board, meaning you have women and minorities on your board of directors, we're not willing to take you public, which I think is a very big deal.
Yeah, that is a huge deal.
So now that they've selected the investment banker, they've written up the prospectus, they've gone on the roadshow, The next thing they do is they really start to build a book of investors. So the investment banks go out and they collect a list of the people that want to invest. And basically, you have to give an indication as an investor of how many shares you would buy if you had a chance to get down with the IPO.
Okay. So it's like Girl Scouts. I think about it like Girl Scout cookies, right?
You need the hookup.
Back in the day, now you can just walk up to Walmart and buy Girl Scout cookies. But back in the day, you used to have to put in your bid on, listen, I need three tree foils. I need two Thin Mints.
Yeah. No, we need five Thin Mints.
Two Do-Si-Dos. Like, you had to put in your bid. They had to approach you and say, listen, if I had some Girl Scout cookies, what would you want to buy?
Yeah.
Okay. And put something on it. And when they come in, I got you.
Yeah.
Right. So an IPO, they are out here pushing them like Girl Scout cookies.
Can I tell you, I don't like to buy them in the store, Girl Scout cookies.
Why?
I want to be like, have the hookup. I want somebody's daughter to be selling them. I want to get word on the street is that, you know, Miss Shirley's daughter has got some Girl Scout cookies. I like to find out about them that way.
So the last 2 years I have bought Girl Scout cookies, it's been online. So now
that's trash.
So now the way they do it is that like each Girl Scout gets her own link.
Okay.
And then you're still buying it from her, right? But you're just doing it all online under her link. And then you pick your cookies, you pay for it, and then they ship to your house. So you don't even interact with the Girl Scout.
I want these girls out there hustling my cookies. I want them dropping them off.
That doesn't sound appropriate. That does not sound appropriate.
Like back in the day, they used to have
I was a Girl Scout, so I sold cookies.
And you hustled them. Did it yourself.
Your parents are out here selling the cookies, really. You ain't selling to nobody, but yes, your parents are out here hustling on your behalf.
Okay, so the investment bank is like the Girl Scout that goes out and collects indications of interest from their clients. Typically, it's the big institutions that they're getting the big orders from, but often individual investors get a chance to put their indications in as well.
Okay.
Now, the issue, though, in reality, is that most of the shares go to institutions in the IPO process. We were able to get some Airbnb shares this month, mainly because we had the hookup. We had a connection to a brokerage firm that was able to secure some shares for us because we were viewed as the institution. We then parceled out the shares to a handful of our clients.
Explain what you mean when you say they go to institutions, because I don't think everybody understands.
Yeah, they go to mutual funds, insurance companies, pension funds. Like, these are the big clients of the investment banks and the broker dealers that often get the majority of the shares.
Right. And that's primarily because they've got a ton of money to buy a lot.
Yeah, that's
right.
A fact.
Like, ultimately, you want to make as much money as possible when you go public. And so you don't want to go to the person who's going to buy one or two shares. You want to go firsthand to the person who's like, listen, I'll buy a million shares out the gate.
Yeah.
You know, so they go to the institutions that can handle big orders. And then whatever's left goes to the small guys.
Yeah. So during the IPO, you need the hookup. Right? Like, I'll give you the example of Airbnb. So Airbnb went public. The IPO price was $68, meaning that was the Girl Scout cookie price that you had to buy through your hookup. And then once Airbnb went public, it opened up to the public at $146.
Right. So if you got in the IPO, the moment it went public, you pretty much doubled your money.
Yeah. And that's doesn't happen all the time, but it happened with Airbnb. It happened with DoorDash, that these companies went up by more than 80%. But then there's a bunch of duds. Like, think back to Facebook. You remember Facebook, Tiffany, in 2012? Facebook was one of the biggest IPOs in history. Their IPO was at 38. Shortly thereafter, the stock was trading at $17 a share.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not a guarantee that it's going to go up. So again, you get shares in the IPO at the hookup price. And then it trades in the public market. But at that point, there's really no telling how high or how low that stock can go. So you hear about venture capitalists, like one of my favorite rappers, Nas, who invested in Ring.
Yeah.
Venture capitalists invest in companies before they go into an IPO process. They're buying shares for, you know, $1 a share, $2 a share. Eventually, that company might have an IPO. And it might be like Airbnb, which did an IPO at $68 a share. And then ultimately, when it trades in the public, Airbnb was hidden for $146 a share. And now that it's in the public, now anybody could buy the stock.
Right. But you are buying it at more than the person who was in the venture capital stage.
Yep.
Or the person who was able to get in at the IPO stage.
Absolutely.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing. Like, you know, you just wasn't VIP in the club. Like, you still got in the club. Like, you still had a good time.
You're in there.
You know, you don't have bottle service like you're Gen Pop. But, you know, listen, as long as you're having a good time and you're playing the music that you like and you met a cutie, it's still a good night. You know, it could still be a great night for you.
Yeah. So what we're saying is, like, with IPOs, it's really important to understand, when did you get in? You're not necessarily getting in at the ground level because you bought shares on the first day it traded, because somebody bought in way before you, right? But it still might be a chance to get in the club.
But you mentioned earlier today that Momentum, we were able to get IPO shares for some of our clients. So I do want to say, like, it's possible, right? But you have to have some sort of meaningful relationship, whether it's with your financial advisor or some major bank or, you know, someone in the investment space. Like, this is not just your mans and them who got the PS5 early might also have some Airbnb, you know, IPO stock. Like, you have to have an ongoing relationship. You have to have been invested. You're consistently invested. Then someone will take you serious in your request. But as Alan mentioned earlier, it's still very unlikely that you're going to get it because this money does go to institutions first.
Absolutely. But we also talked in the first half of the show about other ways to get shares, right? Be an employee of the company. Be a vendor of the company. Like, these are other important ways that a lot of us have access to if we're smart in our career choices.
Yeah, so I will say this now, right? Like, if you're at a company, it's a startup company, and they offer you shares, and you're like, they just not trying to pay me. Take the shares. Like, if you believe in the company, if you believe in what this organization is doing or the work that you are doing, take the shares.
We have a client that came to us, and they were working for a big, well-known, publicly traded company, and they got an offer to go work for a startup that was a very highly touted, like, this could be an IPO in 21 or 22. And she came to us and said, hey, I don't know. I got the bird in the hand versus the one in the bush. Like, this company I'm with, the stock's been doing great. They pay me well. It's secure. My benefits are popping. But then I've got this startup. And I'm like, yo, this startup could change your life if it pops. So I want us to, again, when it comes to your career choices, think about the future of what could happen if that company goes public. So going back to the IPOs, you know, I think what we're trying to get you to understand is that it's not a guarantee that an IPO is going to be successful. Facebook is a perfect example of a company that was highly touted. It went public and eventually the stock price got cut in half. Today, so Facebook went from 38 down to 17. Now it's over $275 a share,
right?
So you did better off in Facebook buying it after the IPO, once it went public. So if you're interested in one of these companies, you want to be patient and think about, where is the stock headed? You know, like, Airbnb dropped after the IPO. It went from 150 down to 130, and it could go lower. Who knows, right? And so there's always a chance to buy an IPO later if you're patient and if the company happens to trade down later. But an IPO is not a guarantee that you're going to make an outsized return. It's not a guarantee that you're going to perform better than the stock market. It's not a guarantee that the company is profitable, but it's a chance to get involved in an early stage of a company.
We're going to continue to talk about IPOs. I'm Tiffany Hawkins.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we're the Momentum Advisors.
It's the pathway to freedom. It's leading to the North Star.
I'm Brandon Janice, and this season on Sick Empire, I'm on a mission to highlight the voices that are helping to heal Black traumas. You'll hear as I speak with experts in alternative medicine.
But the gathering in the greatest degrees of personal integrity would have the greatest degrees of power.
A timeless, natural method of healing.
This is ancient. This is a return to us being in our power, and that knowing that we're medicine women.
Plant magic.
Using medicine that comes from the land. You know, a lot of these medications are the main ingredient are plants that come from the land.
Black economics, prison abolition, and more. Join me as I explore the avenues that lead to greater health while surviving under a sick empire. Every episode of Sick Empire examines the healing journey of Black Americans. We speak to inner city therapists, Black intellectuals, Reiki masters, chefs turned activists, and much more. you'll hear a diverse mix of healing experiences, all told from the lens of Black folks. Sick Empire is still a love language, just like the streets of New York City. The first episode will be live everywhere you listen to podcasts on Monday, November 9th. The first episode is live November 2nd for members of the North Star. You can go to thenorthstar.com to become a member today.
Sick Empire. Sick Empire.
We are back.
Yes.
We are talking about IPOs. So there's a couple of things that we need to think about, or just a couple of additional myths that happen, some things we want you to really understand when it comes to IPOs. Because I think, as we mentioned in the beginning, a lot of people don't actually know what's going on. And somebody will just walk up to you and say something. You're like, yeah, that's true, because I don't know. So a couple of things. So first of all, don't automatically assume that if a company goes public that it's doing strong financially. Like, doesn't mean that they're doing well. Doesn't mean that they're extremely profitable. Sometimes they just need your money. Like, that's the reason for going public.
Yeah, a lot of times a company is losing money and it's hard for them to get venture capitalists to write them another check. They can't take a loan from a bank. They're like, you know what? Let's go public and let's see if the world will give us money.
Right, right. So another thing is that, like, people automatically assume, like, if a company's going public, it must be a great investment. I told you about my experience. Like, I was one of the first people to buy Slack stock, and I've been losing money for most of the time, to be honest with you. Like, I literally think we just broke even. Like, even, like, I just, like, it just became worth what I paid for it maybe 3 weeks ago. Mm. And I was there day one.
So again, with an IPO, no guarantee it's going to go up. If it goes down, that might be a good opportunity to buy if you still believe in that company.
Yeah, 100%.
Other aspects of the IPO, I just want to make sure that people are clear on. There's three times to get in on a company. One is before the IPO, and you can do that either as a venture capitalist, as an employee, or a vendor. There's during the IPO, which you can get in as an investor with a brokerage account with one of the brokerage firms that is giving out shares. Or you can buy shares once they go public. Three different phases, three different prices.
Now, there are some big IPOs happening in the next 6 months that I think we absolutely need to highlight. So one is Roblox. So I don't know anything about Roblox. Personally, I don't have children. But my best friend, his kids are running up his bank account on these Roblox. I don't know if it's a game.
It's a 3D virtual reality system.
But you have to keep buying things. Like, you have to, it's like you're in a virtual world, but you need real money. And you have to keep buying things to, like,
you can't spend virtual money.
No, it's not virtual money. And, like, you got to connect your parents' credit card to,
no,
like,
no,
keep
you can't. No,
operating
you're not.
In this virtual world to keep playing these games.
So, and in other words, parents, keep your kids out of these virtual
listen,
worlds.
Right now, you don't have no choice. You're stuck in COVID, but his kids are obsessed with it. And so I believe that most kids are probably obsessed with this Roblox thing right now, and it is going public.
And to be clear, it's R-O-B-L-O-X.
Yes.
Not roadblocks.
Yes, Roblox.
Because every time you say it, I think you're talking about stumbling blocks.
Yeah, it's not a roadblock. It's not like a roadblock in life. It's a Roblox. R-O-B-L-O-X. So if you are out here with your credit card connected to this game, the least you can do is own some stock in Roblox.
Well, I would have bought some stock if it wasn't for all the Roblox in my way.
Affirm. Affirm is a big one. Affirm is a... it's a financial technology payment operator. Mm-hmm. So y'all know, y'all seen this Affirm, right? It's, you've been out here trying to buy something and they're like, oh, but you can make payments of $29 a month with Affirm. If you own a Peloton, any Peloton piece, there's Affirm. Literally nowadays, I see Affirm offered everywhere. And it is an opportunity to use some form of credit, because I don't necessarily know if they run your credit score. So I think this is one of the things that makes it different. Like, I've been reading about this and I've been talking to a lot of people who use Affirm, and they're like, it's never shown up on their credit report. So I don't know if they're using credit to determine if you can do these payments, but it allows you to break down major purchases with small payments.
So they're putting people in debt in a new way.
I'm just saying, like, they're not holding you as accountable on, you know, your previous history with your credit. And so Affirm was founded by one of the PayPal co-founders. So they've been in this thing for a long time.
Yeah, that could be a big one. And that might be this year, in fact.
Yeah.
Affirm. Other ones that are expected to be big coming up, Stripe. That's one of yours.
Stripe is one of mine. I go hard for Stripe. So Stripe is a merchant services tool, as I mentioned earlier with Square. There are a lot of people who use Stripe if you have some sort of online store. You know, you use Stripe to receive your payments, to do a number of different things. But Stripe has been holding it down for a long time. And so I'm excited about Stripe.
And then finally, Instacart.
Instacart!
You've kept them in business.
Listen. Okay, Instacart holds it down. Now, one thing I will say, I like these companies. Like, I personally like them for my own life. I don't know if they're profitable or not. Like, I have not done the research. I don't know. I have not been checking their annual report. So I don't know how they're actually doing.
Well, that's one of the issues with a private company is that it's hard to do research.
Right.
They don't put out an annual report.
Yes.
Like, when you go public, now the public needs to be informed of information about your company, but when you're private, there's no requirement on publishing information.
So, for example, okay, you know, I get a little colorful.
You should see her face right now.
This is how you know I'm excited. So, you done had Secret Bae for a long time. You've been dating someone for a long time, and no one knows about it. They're not on your social media profile, so you don't have to explain anything to anybody. You don't have to answer any questions. No one's in your business. You don't have to disclose any information about your relationship because nobody knows about it. That's what happens when companies are private. When a company is private, they don't have to give any information about anything.
So they're creeping?
They don't have to talk about how they're doing, if they're making money, if they're losing money, if they're stealing money. It's none of your business because it's private. Just like some of y'all's private relationships. but the moment you post on social media,
I can't do this anymore.
The moment you post the you and him or her on social media, now you got to answer questions. Now we need annual updates. We need to know, are y'all spending Christmas together? Mm. What did he get you for your birthday? Mm. Is he around your family? You know, do your friends like him? Who are his friends?
So that's a relationship IPO?
So yes, once you go public, you know, these companies, once they go public, they are required to give out consistent reports on how they are doing, just like you are required to keep us up to date once you post Bae on your social media profile.
That's a brilliant analogy because there's accountability that comes
exactly
after you make that post.
Exactly.
Because now when you put another dude up, it's
come
like,
on.
All right, come on. How many?
We need answers.
Bae's you got,
we
lady.
Need answers.
Yeah. That's what happens when companies
That's
go public.
That's what happens when companies go public.
Every quarter, they've got to give you an update. Here's how much we made in sales. Here's how profitable we are. Are we paying a dividend or not? Is he coming to Thanksgiving? Is he not?
Right, because once you stop posting Bae, we start making assumptions.
That's a fact.
Okay? Oh, did they break up? Right? What's going on? Same thing. These companies are required now to give quarterly updates. And if they don't, it's illegal. It's a problem.
Yeah, they might have to go private again.
Exactly. And that's happened. Companies have gone back private. Companies have bought back their shares from their shareholders just so they can go back to minding their business.
That's a fact. So you bring us to a great point, Tiffany. Like, there's all these big IPOs that are coming up. We should give some tips on what to do when you're thinking about investing in an IPO. You hit on the first one already. You've got to do the research. Now, the challenge to doing the research, as you mentioned, is that there's no research reports, really. There's newspaper articles. There might be articles about their competitors, but you won't know directly how that company is doing.
Yeah, a lot of that is speculation. A lot of that is opinion. Like, they are not required, and they probably aren't putting out any of their real information because they don't need to.
Yeah, they might tell you things like, you know, we had a whole lot of people go to our website this month.
Right. Or they may be like, you know, we're coming out with a new product. Doesn't necessarily mean that people bought it. Doesn't necessarily mean it was a good product. Like, they don't have to give you any type of performance.
Yeah. When they go public, there's standards on the types of information they have to give. Like, they have to give sales. They have to give profit. They have to show you their entire balance sheet once they're public, their entire income statement once they're public. When they're private, they could just be like, yeah, we're doing pretty good. It's sunny over here.
Mm-hmm.
The next part of doing your research is reading that prospectus, or also known as the red herring.
Draft. First draft.
Read it. It's long, but this is the first time you're ever getting any real meaningful information about that company. Read it. The next thing we'd ask you to do is just be cautious. Skepticism can actually be an asset.
Yeah, like we don't want you to assume, and I think we talked about this earlier, that just because a company is going public, that one, they are doing well, or two, that, you know, the stock will do well in the market. It's not really guaranteed. It could be hit or miss. And so again, oftentimes we say invest in something that you genuinely believe in from a business perspective or from a personal perspective so that you are willing to ride it out. It may be a long road before it is profitable for you. This is not something that you just want to jump into and hope that by day two, everything works out. Sometimes that's how it goes, for sure. Sometimes it's not.
Another thing to think about, again, to your point, Tiffany, about being patient and taking your time, consider waiting for the end of the lockup period. So most people don't know about this, but when a company goes public, the insiders of the company, meaning the employees of the company, they're required to keep their shares for up to 24 months. It's anywhere from 3 months to 24 months. And if you're smart and if you Google, you can find out when the lockup period ends. What happens when that lockup period ends? Imagine you're an employee at that company. And on paper, you went from being worth $10,000 to $10 million. But until you sell your shares, you don't have any cash in your pocket. The moment that lockup period ends, it's the first time that you as an employee can sell your shares. What do you think is going to happen on the day that the lockup ends?
Yeah, I'm definitely selling my shares, you know.
And so, what happens to the price?
Right. The price will go down. So that's exactly what I was getting ready to say. The reason why there is a lockup period is because, as you mentioned, if in 24 hours I become a millionaire, I am likely to sell those shares. And that will have a major impact on the overall performance of the stock. And so the company does not want to see that. They don't want to see numbers going down again because their employees are trying to get their payday. And so they are requiring you to ride that ride. You got to be a ride or die for, as you mentioned, up to 24 months just to make sure things are stable so that things get stable.
And it's not just the employees that can sell. It's the venture capitalists. It's the CEO. They're all locked up until the IPO lockup period's over.
Yeah. And another group that also gets shares, and this is based on a previous podcast episode, are board members. Mm-hmm. If you are a board member, even if they are not public yet, they will oftentimes offer you a pay. You will get a check, but you will also get a considerable amount of shares so that when that company goes public, you also, as a board member, can make a great amount of money also.
Before we go, because we're almost out of time, there's one last type of IPO we want you to be especially careful about, and these are SPACs. A SPAC stands for a special purpose acquisition company. It is also known as a blank check company. These are companies that go public without really telling you a lot about what they're planning to do with the money. Now, sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. One of the biggest blank check IPOs recently was DraftKings. So they went public as Diamond Eagle Acquisition Company. And they basically said, look, give us your money and we're going to go out and find a really good company to buy. And thankfully, it worked out. They bought DraftKings, which a lot of people know about. But what if they didn't find DraftKings? What if DraftKings didn't want to sell to them? These blank check IPOs, also known as SPACs, are very speculative and they've been raising a ton of money in 2020, but you really want to be careful with them.
So I think we did a good job.
Yes.
At this point, you should have some thorough understanding of IPOs.
Yes.
You should have some very clear analogies. I think we went through Girl Scout cookies, Secret Bay. There's a number of things.
Red herrings.
Right. But you should have an understanding of what an IPO is, where you stand with it, and if it's something that you want to get involved in the future.
I love it.
We are gone and we will be back next week.
And before we go, we want to give a special shout out to the North Star. We want to ask you, if you're listening to this podcast on social media, go to your favorite podcast platform and download it.
Or go to thenorthstar.com and take a look at not only our podcast, but some of the other really great podcasts on this platform.
Absolutely. And big shout out to our producer, Willis, and all the folks that helped make this episode possible.
All right. Bye.